not as fat as Tom.
Okay. Kid.
Still's not.
Henry, go ahead.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Hank Weaver welcoming you to another session of Hollywood Byline Coast to Coast and inviting you to listen in on an actual press conference with an outstanding Hollywood star.
Tonight, the star of the radio program, My Favorite Husband, and co-star with Bob Hope in Paramount's forthcoming movie, Fancy Pants, Lucille Ball.
Miss Ball will be interviewed by reporters whose beat is the film capital of the world, reporters who know Hollywood inside out. Let's meet them now as we take a turn around our Hollywood press table and pick up their bylines.
Lloyd Sloan, Hollywood Citizen News and Movie Life Magazine.
Francis Morin of Photoplay Magazine.
Bob Thomas, Associated Press.
Dar Smith, the Los Angeles Daily News.
And now, Miss Ball, if you're not familiar with the format of this program, and if you don't happen to be a regular listener, I might explain that throughout the first portion of the program, our reporters will fire questions at you. And then later on in the program, you'll have an opportunity to turn the tables, so to speak. And then later on, you'll have an opportunity to turn the tables on our reporters and ask them questions.
Good, good, good.
All right, let's go. But before we go into our questioning panel, let's turn to Bob Thomas. I believe he has some rather pertinent and interesting and intimate little notes.
Well, I just wanted to say that my pop thinks that Lucille Ball is the greatest of the glamour girls.
Wow.
He thinks she has class in every inch and carries on the great tradition of Lillian Russell and Anna Held. I agree. But I also envision Lucille as a Clara Barton or a Florence Nightingale. To me, she is a woman of great courage. Shall I illustrate?
Please do.
She had the courage to leave a plushy contract at MGM to become a freelancer. This was at a time when the freelance field was as risky as an ice pond in April. And she has been successful on her own. She had the courage to turn legit, even though her stage training was meager. She took an exacting play, Dream Girl, and braved such tough show towns as Los Angeles and Brooklyn, and did quite well, I might add. She had the courage to make her debut into television a few weeks ago. She had the courage to make her debut into television a few weeks ago. This is a medium which can make glamour girls look like the last days of Queen Victoria.
Yes, sir.
Fortunately, Lucille came out of the tube looking like Lucille Ball.
Out of what tube? Pepsodent?
Television,
oh,
tube.
Oh, television.
Dear. She had the courage to appear opposite Bob Hope, the notorious scene stealer, and she swapped him gag for gag. She had the courage to marry a bandleader, Desi Arnaz. The traveling and working hours of bandleaders are not conducive to a happy marriage, but she has made a success of that, too. Furthermore, she has the courage to face this bunch of inquisitors tonight. But having had some encounters with the bald tongue, all I can say is, watch yourselves, kids. Watch yourselves.
It's a ballpoint tongue.
Very good, Doc.
Lucille, do you think the reporters really need a warning for this interview tonight?
No, they don't need a warning. I need a little help, I'm afraid.
Well, you can gather your help because they're ready to go to work. And the first will be Lloyd Sloan.
Oh, shoot away, Lloyd.
Lucille, Mr. Thomas went through your whole background very well, and one of the things he talked about was making the picture with Bob Hope. We had Dorothy L'Amour on the show last week, and of course she has been another great Hope co-star, and she went into quite a bit of her feelings about working with Mr. Hope. How do you feel about it? How'd you like working with Bob?
Well, needless to say, I loved every minute of it, or I wouldn't have allowed myself to go into another one with him. In fact, I begged for that second assignment. I probably am more grateful to Bob than Dorothy is. I think Dorothy was a big star when she first started with Bob and Bing. But he did me a great deal of good. My career and my, well, just everyday living was enhanced by working with Bob Hope.
Mm-hmm. What about all the gags on the sets? Were there as many with you as there was supposed to have been with Dorothy?
I don't think so. I think Bob and Bing together set off firecrackers at intervals, but Bob alone sort of sticks to business, if you can find him. He does disappear a lot.
I know what you mean.
He's a very busy man.
27 people chasing him around the set all the time.
You ever find out where he goes?
Yes, he's always in another room working on something else.
Francis Morin?
Lucille, what are the chances of your teaming up with Bob Hope for another picture?
Good, I hope, but I haven't had an assignment as yet. I can't even think of the one that I was supposed to ask for in this next year. There was something they were talking about at Paramount, and I was going to get down there and really put my 2 cents in, but
I think there's a sequel coming up to Sorrowful Jones.
That has been talked about, mm-hmm. Yes, Bob. That would be nice, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm, especially for the exhibitors.
Thank you.
Dar Smith?
Thomas just said, commented on you appearing in a television show. I think you'd appeared in two altogether, but the one most of us know is the one you did with Ed Wynn. I presume you liked that.
I did. I loved that one, Dar.
Can you tell us any anecdotes that happened on that show? How was it to work with him?
Well, only wonderful. Only wonderful. Ed has been wonderful to me for several years. He found me in a little play, the only play I ever did. I was working with his son, Keenan, several years ago. And he's always been a great help to me and great inspiration. He asked Essie and I to be on this opening shot he did for Camel, his new sponsors. And we were lucky enough to draw a wonderful script about silent television. He did the first one with Buster Keaton, and he asked me if I'd like to do them, and it sounded like a wonderful idea. I didn't realize it was so much hard work, and we didn't have quite enough rehearsal, but it did come off all right. The only thing I remember about the show, which made it a little bit harder than I anticipated, was that with the mics turned off for silent television, Mr. Wynn and I were telling each other what to do. And every time I told him something to do, I'd give him a wrong cue. And every time he told me, he gave me a wrong cue. So we made it a little harder.
Bob Thomas.
You do think that television is here to stay, though?
Well, I'm afraid so. I do hope the color comes in quickly. I'd like very much to work in it in color. And thank you. I just hope that they get it on film or something so that it doesn't take so much time, so that we don't have to give up pictures to do television or
Vice versa.
Is there any chance of doing your own television show?
Well, they want me to. My Favorite Husband, the radio show that I do for CBS, is a very good show to put on television. It's well written. It's written like a movie script. I have two wonderful writers, three as a matter of fact. And they write sort of in, what you say, Bob, in a scenario form.
Yeah.
And we're ready. And I know it'll be a good show for it, but it does take a lot of time.
Well, Buster Keaton apparently got his break on the Ed Wynn show. Maybe that was your break, too.
Well,
leave us hope, for as far as television is concerned.
For an independent show, that is, I mean.
Well, I can do it if I want to, Dar. It's just that I don't have the time.
Do you think that your film bosses, the men you work for in pictures, would not like having you on a regular television show?
I don't know how they feel about it. I've often wondered if they've ever gotten together with the film bosses in this town. That's what has to happen, you see. TV producers and picture producers have to get together and determine just to how much of it they want done. They're making it difficult for us. We can't commit ourselves to 2 or 3 months, 4 or 5 months, 8 or 10 months, when it takes time out from pictures. There just aren't enough hours in a day.
Well, you're assuming there, of course, that the money in television isn't what it is in pictures today. Do you think the time will come when television will pay enough so that maybe you won't be taking time off from pictures but stay in television itself?
Well, I hadn't thought of it in terms of money. I'd only been thinking of it in terms of time. To me, there just isn't time enough to do it. I don't know how long it would take to equal the salaries that we are paid in pictures.
Mm-hmm. Speaking from experience, it would take ages.
Yes.
Francis Morin?
Have you played comedy roles?
I don't know whether you want to go into it, because I just asked that one.
Well, I think this one.
I thought you were brushing it off.
Oh,
all right. Well, you want to go in? Because I just asked the other one. You better say, Lloyd, you have another one or something.
Lloyd, do you have another question to follow there?
Yeah, Hank. Lucille, getting away from television, recently you won an award for being the top comedian of 1949, right?
That's right. It was very flattering. I don't know how it happened. It just descended upon me, and I'm very grateful, and it's home on the mantle.
Well, I'm sure we all think it was well-deserved.
Thank you, Lloyd.
I was wondering if you have thought about... I'll frame the question differently. We had Ida Lupino on the show a while back, and of course she is one of our leading feminine directors at the moment. She and Claudette Colbert are the only ones, actually. But she's very excited about directing. How would you feel about having been voted the top comedian about directing comedy pictures?
I wouldn't know where to start.
You wouldn't want to.
And now back to you, Francis.
Have you played comedy roles, Lucille, because you preferred them or because of the circumstances of being cast for them, let's say?
Well, I've been lucky enough to be cast for them. I do think that I prefer them. I think anyone who starts out life as an ugly duckling sort of takes to comedy, if you know what
How's
I mean.
That again?
That's right, Bob. I was the tall, skinny one and the in school, and when I came out here as a Goldwyn girl several years ago, I was the ugly duckling in that group.
My, you've come along.
Well, I hope so. I hope I've been able to use some of my good points and cover up the others, but that is, I'm afraid, how a lot of comedians and comedians start.
Well, have you any desire to do a straight dramatic role?
Yes, and I have done them. Well, not straight dramatic, I guess, comedy drama. I did The Big Street, a Damon Runyon story, which was quite a dramatic role some years ago, and it's been one of my favorite pictures and one that's done me a great deal of good throughout the years. Right. Noisy
well,
in here, isn't
we'll
it?
Somebody dropped his watch.
I want that sound effect later.
What are they doing?
No. We'll
see you, NBC Spies.
Hey, will you, comedian, shut up?
Oh, it's much better.
You're colder than I am.
I know,
now.
No, I'm sorry. No, we're still leaving.
Put that ABC mic up there. Only $28,000 shot to hell.
You're kidding.
Oh, at least they're. You know they are. That's what people tell me about.
Hi.
Sorry. The noise started just as
Big Street. Let's go back here.
Big Street.
Big Street. Sorry.
Let Franco do it. He's
yeah, he's an executive.
Let's go right back here.
Is your watch going? You want to ask Francis? Ask it again.
No, I don't think that's.
I don't think it began in there. I think it began after I.
I think it began after I finished my question.
In fact, I was unaware of it till it had been clattering along for a couple of seconds.
Naturally, naturally. That better? An electric blanket next week.
It's the Iceman for the Coca-Cola. You guys got big cans of ice cubes.
Probably
Bill, while we're at it, will you tell Frances, the one on the end, to please speak up a little louder, not to wander off mic while she speaks or something.
Okay.
Don't turn it up. Okay. Okay, Dar, let's get back to you again.
Just pick it up. Kick it around from there.
Well, Lucille, how about doing a straight dramatic role?
Wait a minute, start over again, I'm sorry.
Lucille, how about doing a straight dramatic role?
I think you better phrase it to make it fit a little more. Well,
that's the way it was asked before.
As you phrased it before very well, I mean,
Well, how about doing a dramatic role?
Well, how much have we said now? I'm confused.
No, we ended up with what you're talking about.
How about doing a dramatic role?
The comedy.
We're going to repeat this question.
Yeah, but I still don't know where it
Well, how about doing a dramatic role in the future? That's, I mean,
is
that's
what
the
you
way
mean?
You
want
to
you're
do
going
it.
Go on,
yeah,
huh?
Decency again.
Okay, Frank.
Was that cigarette bomb
right,
before?
Here we go.
I was sorry.
Quiet. Okay.
Lucille, you've done all these comedies. How about doing a straight dramatic role for a change?
Well, I did a dramatic role, wasn't a straight dramatic role, several years ago, a picture called The Big Street, a Damon Runyon story, and I love doing it, but I don't know that I have any big desire to go all dramatic. All comedians are supposed to have that big desire, I know, but I haven't. One of my faults, I'm sure, in this business, this erstwhile career of mine, is that I have been content to do most anything people offered me. I just am a big ham, and I like to act. And I don't care what I do it in or when or where. I find that that isn't too good, that I should be more discriminating. I should yell a little bit more, and I'm trying to learn to be that way. But it is hard. It's the most difficult thing that I find to do in this town is to squawk. May be a little hard to believe, but it's true. I mean, so far as my career is concerned, I like all phases of it. I like radio, I like television, I like comedy, I like drama, I like musicals. What else?
What do you mean? You would like to be more? You should be more discriminating. You mean in your selection of roles?
Well, yes, I think so. I was 7 years at RKO, and I just got in the habit of doing what I was told, and because at that time I was very lucky to have a job at all in such a well-paid apprenticeship I was serving that I didn't know the meaning of saying I shouldn't do this. I should have something better. It should raise me a rung in the ladder. I don't know. I suppose I should nowadays be saying that this next role has to be such and such, the next one has to be such and such, and in 2 years it should be at this point. I just have never taught myself to think that way. I'm a big ham. I like to do anything.
What about your agent? Does he your choice of role?
I've had several agents, and that is why I say all that, because I find that if you don't blow your own horn in this town or any other town, if you don't have the highest opinion of yourself and the looking ahead in your career or your job, no matter what it is, nobody else is going to have it for you. And that's what I've had to learn. I've had to learn what the next step should be and try to make it the correct one rather than just go along and be too happy with what I'm doing.
Well, do you think maybe if you had done dramatic roles or more of them, you might have been on a higher level, say, for Academy Award nominations and that sort of thing? Or do you regret, for instance, that you're not in that category?
Well, that's a three or four in a loop there you gave me, Lloyd, but I'll try to straighten them out. I do not regret not doing dramatic roles, no. One comes along, and it has, and I did it, and it was successful, and I feel fine about it. Given another, I would feel great. Very happy to do it. I don't feel that it has held me back in any way, except, as you say, perhaps for an Academy Award. I think there's only been one or two comedies that have ever gotten an Academy Award. And an Academy Award does mean a lot to us out here. And I think it's getting to mean more and more all the time. Any of the awards are highly regarded. Pardon me. And, I don't know. I forgot what else you said.
That's all. I wasn't going for. There were only two of them.
I'd just like to ask how she proposes to blow her own horn in the future.
Well, you don't do it vocally, I don't think. I don't mean you don't go around saying, I am this, I think this way, I do that. But you, in your actions and in the way you react to... In the way you react to reactions you get. Do you know what I mean by that?
I think so.
Well, I think the horn blowing's been pretty good so far. I don't know, maybe I wouldn't try to change it too much in the future.
Well, I've accomplished a lot in the last 2 years, Lloyd. And in a career way, and what's the other word, Bob? Myself.
Personal?
Personal way, yes.
Internally.
I think better. I believe I do. I'm happier. I'm more relaxed. I kind of know where I'm going, and I'm pleased with the idea.
I mentioned earlier about your leaving a very good MGM contract. Do you ever regret that?
Oh, no, I've never regretted that because it was an amicable parting, and it worked out very well. I had reason to regret it, I suppose, had anything happened, but nothing bad happened. My reason for leaving was just that I felt I was lost in the shuffle, and I needed a whole new... life, a whole new beginning. And that is my way of doing things. I go along so... I can be unhappy so long, and then I go, that's all, cut, here we go, right from the beginning someplace. I like those clean, new beginnings. They were very nice about it. I had a wonderful time at Metro, but as soon as they didn't feel that I was making money for them, good box office, I felt that was the time to get out and become box office some other place. That seems to be the cry and hue in this town. So that's what I'm becoming.
Lucille, we've covered television and comedy and drama on the screen. What about your future plans for the legitimate theater?
Well, I had my first taste of the legit recently, as Bob told you, in Dream Girl. I had never been on the stage before except that one little eensy-teensy thing I did some years back.
What was that?
A thing called Hey Diddle Diddle. Lela Rogers helped me get my first play, and it was not a very big hit or anything. We were out for about 3 months, but it was a taste. Anyway, years later, I was in back east, and I had a chance to go in summer stock. And so I chose Dream Girl. Ignorance is indeed bliss. I had no idea what I was getting into, the toughest play I think ever written for a gal, so they tell me. And But as I say, not knowing what I was doing, it wasn't quite so hard, I suppose. I learned the lines, and we happened to play to good houses. And I broke some records, which made me feel very good. Took in a lot of money. Got a taste of it. I know what I'm doing now. I can always go out on the road and enjoy it. I don't know about reviving Dream Girl, but I always can. I was supposed to take it to Europe. But that's a little too far away from the ranch.
Well, Lucille, apropos of reviving Dream Girl, you were such a sensation here, at least, in Los Angeles, and I presume other places, that seemed to me like it'd be a pretty good idea.
Well, reviving Dream Girl would mean traveling on the road, and I have my radio show now, so that makes traveling impossible.
That old devil time again, huh?
Yes. There just aren't enough hours, are there, Dar?
What I wanted to know is, did you learn anything from your experience with Dream Girl on the stage that you couldn't have learned in pictures? Do you think it was good training in that regard?
Well, it certainly was good training. I came out of that feeling like I had been, relaxing for a year. I was 32 weeks with that show. It was the hardest thing I ever did, and yet I was mentally better fit than I have ever been. I was thinking faster. I was feeling better. People said I looked better.
Could it be that audience reaction, hearing the applause instead of reading the preview cards?
Audience reaction. Well, I've heard a lot about that audience reaction. I never was aware that there was an audience in any place that I played. Believe it or not, I never saw any of them, and I never heard any of them.
Don't you have to wait for the laughs?
I guess so, but I do that automatically, and I think every comedian does. I never know whether I have an audience or not. But you're on your mettle. You're thinking. You're thinking hours and hours every night, and you just get all keyed up, and your voice changes, and your attitude changes, and you get stronger, and you're not afraid. I don't know what it is, whether it's the projecting or... I'm not explaining it very well, am I?
I think very clearly.
Lucille, getting down to things personal, I understand that when you get mad, you're apt to throw things. Is
now,
this true?
Francis, where did you ever hear that? It's absolutely true.
Everybody does.
I throw
what
anything
throw?
I can find.
Take your hand off that microphone.
Well, I have a very quick temper. I'm over it before the other guy gets angry at me. And I have been known to throw a few things. That's sort of a childish habit I'm growing out of, I guess.
What do you like to throw best?
Well, I threw a chair once. I picked up a typewriter once. That was a little heavy. I didn't try that again.
How do the dishes hold up out at your house?
Well, you see, they're mine, so I don't throw them.
Do you plan to do any kind of a nightclub act with your husband, Desi Arnaz?
Juggling, perhaps?
Juggling dishes?
No. We are getting an act together. Desi has to play Europe, and they want us to play the Palladium together. And they also want us to do a 30-day, one-night stand tour here in America before we go to Europe.
What type of act?
Well, it'll be a variety show. We'll carry some acts with us. And we'll do a little singing, a little dancing, a little gab in between, I suppose. I'll try to look my best and keep up with my ever-loving husband.
Is that definite, Lucille, or is it just being planned?
It's quite definite. We're supposed to go out in April and play for 30 days, and I come back and finish my show for this year, the radio show, and then I'm supposed to go to Europe in June with Desi. We're supposed to be there June, July, and August. We may make a picture over there, too.
For who?
Well, the picture?
Well, let me. Now we have two questions that you answered without even getting into
She's
the
game.
Yeah. Who would you make the picture for? Who would you make the picture for?
Well, Louis Milestone, a wonderful friend of ours and a great director, is over there now, and he wants to do the life of Robert Capa. Robert Capa was the life photographer during the war, and he wrote a book called Slightly Out of Focus. And he saw Desi, and he didn't even know him, and he said, there is the man that must play my life. And Desi wants very much to do it, and there is a part for me in it, and I would love to do it, so that is perhaps what we're going to do in Europe this summer if the script is ready.
How about you and Desi doing a picture over here?
We haven't found the right script yet. There have been a lot of scripts submitted to us, but not the right one.
But you are looking?
Oh, yes.
And you'd like to do one, then?
Yes. Got
with
one?
With your temperament, this dish-throwing thing, might not this be rather disastrous for you and Desi to appear in the same picture?
No. I haven't done any dish-throwing. Why do you hark back to that?
Reputation.
I don't. My reputation is not built on dish-throwing, I hope. However, if we go out on the on tour, we find that when we're together 24 hours a day, that's when we're the happiest. It's these separations that are bad for anyone.
Cut, please. That prayer answers that.
13.
Very good.
Mm-hmm. Well, just get back to this, then he can come in. Mm-hmm.
This blends.
We're going to talk some more about the
blends. Sure. It blends.
Go ahead, that's the time to ask that now.
Sure, we'll follow
that. Let's throw it in, because I think I'm going to cut this out. No, that's yours.
Did it is?
No, it's mine. Which? Mine is the next one.
It's dark.
I'm not sure.
Oh, you want that?
Here, take this. Well, what we finish now goes right into that nicely.
Yeah. How should we frame it?
The Weaver blowtorch.
How should we frame it?
Miss Ball, well, I think I know where I'm going to cut it. If you would just ask Miss Ball, the fact that you had to be separated on these trips, and then you answered in the same way you did, that you're happier.
Oh, no, don't make me answer in the same way.
No, let me...
What's the matter with what you did? I can't double back on what I've done, because I never say it the same. Sounds to me like that next question comes right after what I said.
Yeah.
I think that's all right. Sure.
Try it anyway.
Let me have a wild track. I'll show you how I can
do it. Well, Lucille, does the fact that you have to be separated for long periods of time have any effect on your marriage?
It only...
He's just going to put that in.
Puts it in between.
In before your answer.
So he's what right answer?
The answer you already gave.
That's not my answer.
It was about being happiest when you're together.
Remember?
That's not my answer.
Well, take her other
yes, I know, but that's not my answer.
I'd like to answer that
question. Sure.
Well, shall I ask it again so she'll be alive? Okay?
No, I can't think of it.
Well, Lucille, does the fact that you have to be separated for long periods of time have any effect on your marriage?
Yes.
What effect?
A very good one.
How?
Well, it gives us about 5 or 6 honeymoons a year, literally.
Oh, that's nice.
We've been married for 9 years, and we've had, actually, 5 or 6 honeymoons a year, sometimes 7 or 8. Whenever Desi is... about to leave, we are already planning the next time we're together. Gives you something to think about all the time. Gives you something to plan for. Makes everything more exciting. Makes being home more wonderful. Every minute that you're together, you're making use of it. You're not scrapping over anything. You're not wasting your time. You're having fun. You're seeing the people you want to see and doing the things you want to do.
Do you keep in touch with each other?
Oh, yes. We have telephonitis. You know what that is, Francis?
Yes, I do.
It's expensive, ain't it?
Yeah, it certainly is.
Lloyd Sloan.
Well, Lucille, it sounds like your marriage to Desi is a very happy one, but I understand you have some definite opinions about Hollywood divorces.
Well, Desi and I have been happy. We've had our ups and downs. I don't think there's anyone who's been married that hasn't. If they have, it's been quite uninteresting for them, I suspect. Certainly nothing uninteresting about our marriage. We did have almost more than we could bear during the war a few times, and we did separate for 3 months. We did contemplate getting a divorce. We thought it all over, we talked it out, and we decided this. Usually when couples divorce, they remarry. The woman then makes a better wife than she was before for the man she marries, and the man makes a better husband than he was. So two other people profit by our mistakes. So we decided that we'd stick together and profit by our own mistakes.
Recently, you and Desi went through another marriage, 9 years after your original one.
We were married in the Catholic Church.
Oh, I see.
Desi. He'd kill me if he could hear that. Desi is a Catholic. I am not. I studied for several months I am not a Catholic, but I studied enough to be married in the Catholic Church, and I am becoming a Catholic. I could embrace any religion. No one particular religion is more precious to me than another. I try to live mine.
As long as we're asking some personal questions, Lucille, I'd like to ask about the color of your hair and just why you keep it that color.
Well,
what color is it? I'm colorblind.
I call it orange.
Oh, Frances, and you're a woman, the only woman at this table. Now, let's see. Now, it's red gold. Isn't it, Frances?
Well,
isn't
that's,
it?
That's your opinion.
Okay.
She's colorblind,
everybody. My natural hair, inasmuch as you brought it up, is sort of a mousy brown, I'm afraid. This is a happy color for me. I like it. It's been very lucky for me. I've had it for several years. I wouldn't know what to do without it.
Are you superstitious about it?
How do you mean?
That you feel it's lucky for you.
Oh, yes. Yes, I think I am.
How do you keep it that color? Is there a special process?
Well, yes.
I mean, was
secret.
It something about champagne or something?
I do use champagne on my hair quite often. It gives it body. You wouldn't know about things like that.
No.
I also wash it in beer.
That he would know about.
That's known as getting ahead on.
That I know.
Well, Mr. Thomas,
pretty good,
please.
Bob.
Lucille, the story going around town is you got a fabulous, huge mink coat made of at least 40,000 skins.
Oh!
A recent present. It's got sleeves on it. I think you could carry a beer keg in.
Oh, dar.
How come you're not wearing it now?
Well, I'm saving it.
What's that thing you've got around your neck? That's made out of mink, isn't it?
This is a tippet. This is a little mink tail.
I beg your
tail.
Pardon?
A tippet. This is a mink tail.
Does it do any good?
Well, it keeps my neck warm, and it sort of adds something to the suit, don't you think? About the mink coat, I got that for my anniversary, and it is not 400,000 skins, and I don't carry beer kegs in each sleeve. It is a good-looking coat, I think. It's a Dior model, and Desi picked it out himself, and I'm very proud of it. It happens to be my first mink coat. No one believes that, but it's true.
Well, I hear that you take it to a party and you refuse to take it off. This is the first one the girls had.
Oh, no. No, I'm always very anxious to take it off so I don't have to sit down in it.
Practical.
Yes.
Lloyd Sloan.
Cut. Because
we're switching.
Yes.
Then I went back to the original.
We didn't notice.
All right.
That's all right. Let him take it.
Are we going to skip that, though? Aren't we?
What?
No, he's
got one. Well, why don't you... Well, you can go back into it if you want.
We've got a lot of time, haven't we?
Let's go back over these and... Why don't we leave it in this order, then? No. No, it doesn't matter.
Let's let Doris go. Let's get back to
the
serious.
Okay, do you think actors hurt themselves? Yeah. Are we live now? We live? Okay. Lucille, do you think actors... Lucille, do you think actors hurt themselves by publicly advocating either economic or political principles?
Well, I think actors or actresses who don't know what they're talking about certainly do. I'm sure there are a great many... male and female performers in this town that do know what they're talking about when they get into politics or, I don't know, I don't even know enough about it to talk about it right now, but it certainly wouldn't do me any good to try to get into a meeting and or group and view my opinions because I don't have any.
Well, you don't think that actors necessarily offend their public by stating their personal views?
Well, offend... I don't know. I think it's safer to stay out and stick to entertainment. That I'm sure of. But I can't say that we don't have a great many learned people in our profession, and they certainly are entitled to speak. And certainly we have to have someone speak for us. There are too few of us, like myself, they get into a show and say, no, I'm not civic-minded. I don't know. And I'm sure I, for one, could give a lot more help to things, but I just... don't know how to do it.
Well, with that very frank reply, Miss Ball, we call a halt to our first part. Well, why did we stop in the first place?
Because we didn't know where we were going, because Lloyd had a possible another question, you see.
I thought we were getting off.
Maybe she
We're keeping secrets.
Do you have a gag for the radio commercial thing or something? It's the only question we've left out.
No, I don't have any gag for it.
What would you answer?
Well, my explanation of it is not very...
Well, let's let it go.
Just like Hank said.
Well...
Thank you for your
I mean, we can go into a song and dance, you know. Soft shoes, sand.
No song and dance start yesterday.
How much time you got?
Well, Miss Ball, with that very frank reply, we call a halt to the first part of our Hollywood Byline press conference. In a very few moments, we're going to let you do a little asking of questions.
Uh-huh.
But first... we will. But first, let's listen to Jack Latham.
Today, America's schools are still suffering from the damage they experienced during and after the war. A shortage of qualified teachers, too few young people preparing to become teachers, classrooms overcrowded in many places, educational plants that are inadequate and in many places obsolete. The chief victims are your children. Parents and citizens can help by joining and working with local civic groups and school boards to improve educational conditions. They can also show by their friendliness and interest that they appreciate the vital importance of the teacher's services to them, their children, and their community. A good thing for everyone to remember is that our teachers mold our nation's future. And now back to Hollywood Byline and your moderator, Hank Weaver.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to your reserve seat at our coast-to-coast Hollywood press table with our guest star, Miss Lucille Ball. Miss Ball has just been interviewed by Lloyd Sloan of the Hollywood Citizen News, Bob Thomas of Associated Press, Francis Morin of Photoplay Magazine, and Dar Smith of the Los Angeles Daily News. And now, Lucille, we spin the table around, so to speak, and give you an opportunity to ask some questions.
Recording, you can cut for just a second or two here. Now, here's where you get to ask us.
You might want to chop some down.
Now, if you want to...
that's the paper.
I've got this...
Go ahead.
Listen in again at this same time next week when ABC, over many of these stations, presents another edition of Hollywood Byline, featuring an exclusive on-the-air press conference with an outstanding movie star, interviewed by reporters whose beat is Hollywood, the film and glamour capital of the world. Next week, our guest will be one of Hollywood's veteran stars, Robert Young. Hollywood Byline is directed by William T. Johnson and is transcribed in Hollywood. Now, here's a listening reminder.
Want him to stop rolling for a while?
No.
Let's go right on.
Keep rolling,
everybody. You want me to give it on the first? All right.
Quiet, please.
And now, Lucille, we've reached that point in the program where we spin the table, so to speak, and give you an opportunity to that. And give you an opportunity to ask the questions. Are you ready?
Thank you, Hank. I have a couple, just a couple I'd like to ask about. I wanted to know for a long time why it is, Bob, maybe you can help me. I really want a frank answer. Why is it that unhappiness always has to make the news? Why is that true? I know it's true. Happy marriages mean nothing. Divorces mean a great deal to you. Bad health, mental health or otherwise, disregarding murders and things like that. I know they're news, but why is it that all the unhappiness in this town always has to be played up? I'm talking about this town. Why don't couples who have been married 19 years, for instance, why aren't wonderful long stories written about them? Why is it just the quick, unhappy things?
Well, this goes back to the nature of news itself. What do women talk about over the back fence? How long they've been happily married, or how Mrs. McGillicuddy down the street is throwing crockery at her old man?
Well, yes, gossip is the answer. Gossip is the interesting thing. Well, then, maybe I should say this way. We hear all the time about how Hollywood is constantly thrown to the wolves. one person in our midst does something wrong, and the whole town pays and pays and pays and pays. What can we do about it? What have you any ideas at all? For instance, I see you come on the set. You say, "What's new?" Well, I got 100,000 things I could tell you quickly what's new, and I know you're not interested in any of them. If I haven't got a quick divorce or I've stuck my mother with an axe or something, I know you're not interested, not just you, but most all of the boys that say what's new.
I hope I would never ask what's new.
I'll never say that again.
Well, the equivalent of it. Got anything to tell me today or anything like that?
Well, anyway. I think, Lucille, that there is quite an interest in Hollywood at the moment. Your attitude typifies it among stars, producers, and everyone else involved to change this attitude of the press towards the film industry. I know the Motion Picture Association and the Johnston office is doing all it can, and the newly formed Motion Picture Industry Council is trying to do a large public relations job to make people think in a little nicer way about Hollywood, and not to always expect the bad stories and expect no good stories, so that we may be in a period of transition right now where a little better era will come out of it.
I hope so. Downtown Los Angeles, I don't know what toes I'm stepping on here, but for instance, a girl gets picked up for being drunk. It's a horrible thing to talk about, but no matter if she has even been within 40 miles of Hollywood, it says actress found drunk in street, that type of thing. How can we stop it? What should we do when we read that? Rush down there and say, "We don't know this girl. She does not belong to the Screen Actors Guild. She is not one of us."
It might help.
It certainly might.
Matter of fact, the Screen Actors Guild, as a rule, puts out a bulletin explaining that.
Yes, but the rest of the world doesn't get to read the bulletin.
Well, that's to be dispensed by various news mediums, believe
yes.
me.
I think in the last year there's been a great reawakening in Hollywood of their social responsibility and how they feel about what the world thinks about them. And I think that in this coming year of 1950, you'll see a lot of changes made.
Well, I hope so. It's just that there are so many people here that never do anything wrong, and then the whole town gets a black eye all the time with people don't even belong to us. Don't even belong. Our culprits are so few and far between when you take the number of us that are in this business. And then people who don't belong to the business give us a black eye. Anyway, one other thing I wanted to ask you, and that is dropping that other subject entirely. I want to know this, Bob, particularly from you. Oh. You've written a lot of nice things about people. About me, for instance. And I'm one of those terrible people that do not send thank you notes. I know why I don't. When I first came out here and was a beginner, a starlet, or whatever you want to call us, I did send thank you notes. And it got around town that I was doing the right thing because I knew that was the thing to do. And so any sincere feeling that went into the little note that I sent, it wasn't to you at the time, it was to someone else, that squelched it right there. I didn't dare send a note. In the meantime, throughout the years, there's been a lot of nice things written to me, and I just would love to have sent a little note or done something, but I always remembered that, gee, if I do that, they'll think I know I'm doing the right thing and that it isn't sincere. And now, what do you do about that?
Can I make a suggestion?
Yes.
Get that old pen out again. I don't know how the others feel here, but I don't care if we hear beefs about what we write or if you like it, but the one thing we can't stand, and that is apathy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Either way, good or bad, you'd like to hear from us.
Right.
I think there's
right.
a lot of ham, Lucille, and most of the newspapermen out here and probably around the country, and they like a nice word as much as anyone else, a pat on the back if it is something that has helped.
At least they like to be read. And
that's right, and at least they'll know, and if it's something that you consider destructive.
Did I show you this note I got here?
Yeah.
A fan mail says, "Mr. Thomas, you're nuts."
You like that. At least you hear it from, you know the man's reading.
That makes
you. Is that it? What about you, Dar?
Are we still on? Well, Lucille, I've got a tip for you.
What?
If you want to write nice notes to newspaper men and make them feel good, don't necessarily just limit it to a thank you note for those nice things that we might have said about you,
mm-hmm.
but tell a newspaper man what a magnificent job of reporting he had done in the job he did on you. It's just like in writing reviews, we say either you did a bad job or a good job, and we are being constructive and objective,
mm-hmm.
and this is It'll make him feel much better, I assure you.
Well, if I would recognize a good reporting job, that's something I shall have to get up on.
Francis?
Every note makes a fan out of the writer.
Good or bad, is that right?
Good. Not that you can sway us, mind you.
Yes, I know. The damage is already done.
Lucille, do you have one more question for them, please?
Let me see now. I know something I want to ask you. Two or three of you here review pictures. How can you go to previews practically every night of your life and have an open mind and really an unbiased opinion when you write those reviews? You have to train yourself, I understand, but still, how do you do it?
It's difficult to maintain an open mind. There's no doubt of that, because we do see too many motion pictures. We see too many stage shows.
And sometimes in the morning you have to review
pictures.
That's
right. Tomorrow I'm seeing one, clearly.
Hope it's not mine.
Sunday morning, too. I have to see it Sunday morning.
Anybody else? Excuse me. Are we all going to freeze on it, or are we going to come on? Yes.
I think let Murray answer and then close, by the way.
Oh, I want to ask Francis one thing.
Should I say? Well, I said something on one show once, sort of an answer to this that was cut out anyway, but if we did, we'd have
to... He remembers
anyway. A regular seat in the projection room and just live there. Even as it is, we don't see most of them, in other words. Just say that. All right. All right. Well, Lucille, actually, even seeing as many pictures as we do, I think most of us see probably about 40 or 50% of those that are released each year. The only answer I can think of to see them all and really evaluate them and get a regular... The only way to really see them all probably would be to rent a projection room of your own and live there and have all your meals sent in and just stay there all day long, because none of us really see all the pictures.
It still gives you a mixed-up feeling when you're reviewing them, that's what I mean. You're not quite sure whether you saw Shelley Winters and the Passion Play or...
You're perfectly right, especially when you've seen about seven in a row and then don't write them all immediately and try to sit down and write.
Well, it's a great worry. I worry about you boys. Francis, I want to ask you one thing.
Fire ahead.
This has not anything directly to do with you. I don't think it has happened to me through you, but it has happened to me and some others. For instance, they want a house layout. And you say, well, my house has been shot in color and in black and white, upside down, inside out, and what could they possibly want? They've seen the living room. I haven't had it done over in years. I say, well, we want a little cooking thing, or we want the domestic side. So we go home, we get into our domestic clothes, and go into the kitchen and do as we're told when the photographers come, thereby showing our house, showing how we look in the kitchen and whatnot. Then comes the story, and quite often the story will say, not just kidding it, but really laying out the fact that we are lying. We never go into the kitchen. We are doing this only for a picture. We wear the apron only for the photographer. And here is our recipe, which we so kindly submitted. We dug down in the drawer for grandmother's recipe, and we gave it to you, and... still, it says, really, Miss Ball and Mr. Arnaz do not do their own cooking. They don't like to cook. They just did it for this. That has happened so many times to so many of us. Why do they ask for those layouts if they don't believe they're true? Must we have you to dinner and cook it before your very eyes before you believe we can cook, or doesn't it matter, the whole damn thing?
Well, I can only speak from my knowledge of working on photoplay. But we don't do such kidding layouts, although I realize that there are a lot of readers who must gag every time they see somebody frying another egg in that inevitable frying pan. Why they indicate that you don't cook or that you're not domestic, I wouldn't really know.
I suppose, actually, here's something that I am absolutely certain of. Someplace, wrong about 8 or 9 years ago, they started to open up this town too much to the readers. These fan magazines have taken away every bit of glamour, every bit of mystery that there is in this business. They know too much about us, giving them the privilege of tearing us down. We are compared with everyone else in the United States, and they don't like it. They like to feel that we are different. They like to feel that our world is a little bit different. It buoys up their dream world. I think that we should stay in a dream world for our, what you call it, listeners, our public. And I, what, Hank? Do you agree with me?
I certainly do, Miss Ball, but we're not in a dream world, and we do have to go by a clock on the wall.
Oh, I hope they cut this.
Well, if they don't, all I've got to say, Miss Ball and members of our panel, it's time now to bring to a close another edition of Hollywood Byline. But before saying goodnight, our sincere thanks to you, Lucille Ball, for appearing on this program.
Thank you, Hank. Wake up, Dar.
We'll see you again soon in Paramount's Fancy Pants, and we'll be listening to your radio show, My Favorite Husband.
Thank you.
Our thanks, too, to our panel of reporters, Dar Smith, Sleepy Smith of the Los Angeles Daily News, Francis Moran of Photoplay Magazine, Robert Thomas of Associated Press, and Lloyd Sloan of the Hollywood Citizen News and Movie Life Magazine. See you all at our Hollywood press table at the same time next week. Until then, this is Hank Weaver saying goodnight from Hollywood.